Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, December 20th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
global stocks tumble following the Fed decision.
The yen strengthens, the dollar weakens, and oil tumbles.
Yields fell, stocks fell.
We have to watch the shape of the yield curve and credit spreads.
Markets were looking for a more flexible Fed, a more we feel your pain kind of Fed.
The Senate has approved a temporary spending bill to avert a shutdown, and facing a bipartisan backlash, President Trump defends his decision to pull out of Syria. I'm Pat Carroll. That's ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Ahead in sports, the Nets win their seventh straight, the Knicks fall hard in Philly, and the Yankees had a visitor.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
And global stocks are falling after yesterday's Fed decision. 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 2.5 points this morning. Dow futures down 24. NASDAQ futures down about 2. The DAX in Germany is down almost 1%. The CAC in Paris down 1.3%. And the FTSE 100 down 0.5%. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 2.8%. Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.76%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.64%. NYMEX crude oil down 3.2% at $1.52 to $46.65 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.25% or $3.10 to $12.59.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.1476. The yen, 111.73. Nathan.
Karen, global equity markets are reacting violently to the Fed decision. Chairman Jerome Powell suggested he will be more cautious about raising rates next year, but investors wanted more.
The economy may not be as kind to our forecasts next year as it was this year. History attests that unforeseen events as the year unfolds may buffet the economy and call for more than a slight change from the policy projections released today.
And equity investors were not pleased by those projections, with the Fed's dot plot calling for 2 more rate hikes next year.
But Scott Minor, chief investment officer at Guggenheim, says Powell's plan to continue reducing the central bank's bond holdings is what sparked real concern.
The minute he eliminated the possibility of adjusting the pace of the size of the Fed's balance sheet, the market took a decided crackdown. Yields fell, stocks fell, and bank loan ETFs, the high yield ETFs, both cliffed at that moment.
Some analysts had hoped that recent market turbulence would convince the Fed to stop rolling off its balance sheet.
And Chairman Powell repeatedly called the outlook for next year positive, though policymakers did lower their forecast for growth to 2.3%. Jeffrey Rosenberg is chief fixed income strategist for BlackRock.
Powell put the put away, or he restruck it lower. Markets were looking for a more flexible Fed, a more we feel your pain kind of Fed, and he didn't give any of that.
Although Powell did shy away from saying whether the central bank would eventually boost rates into restrictive territory to prevent the economy from overheating.
Going forward, policymakers need to provide more clarification on plans for their balance sheet. That's according to Glenn Hubbard, former chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers.
I think the Fed, first of all, has to become a little bit clearer to the markets and the public about where the balance sheet should be. And then the second is to acknowledge that we are shifting to a more quantitative tightening regime and try to give a sense of what's the net tightening between the funds rate changes and the balance sheet changes. So I think it's a communication issue for the Fed.
Powell did acknowledge some downside risk to the central bank's outlook, saying there's a mood of angst about growth.
Still, he mostly downplayed the implications of market volatility. That has Bob Dahl, chief equity strategist at Nuveen Asset Management, worried the Fed could be making a mistake.
The Fed has been a huge friend of the stock market, and they're now, a little bit of an enemy and probably become worse of an enemy before this is all over. So we have to watch the shape of the yield curve and credit spreads, and the balance sheet of the Fed has a lot to do with that.
Following Powell's remarks, the S&P 500 finished the day down 1.5%, while the NASDAQ slid more than 2%.
And that negative sentiment is spreading across Europe this morning. Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek joins us live from London with the details. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Yes, stocks falling in Europe for the fifth day in six. You've got every sector lower on the Stock 600. Under particular pressure are the miners. That after the Fed failed to provide relief for risk assets. Within that sector, you're seeing the aluminium producers under most pressure, the likes of ArcelorMittal and Norsk Hydro. That is, the US says it's lifting sanctions on Enplus in 30 days. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salik, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Seb, thanks. Stock in Asia tumbled as well, with both the Fed and the Bank of Japan weighing on sentiment. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us with details on that from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. A decision by the Bank of Japan to keep its monetary policy unchanged disappointed investors, boosting the yen to its highest level against the dollar since October. The topics closed lower by 2.5% in Tokyo. The index now 21% down from its January peak and on track for its worst December since 1959. But Rusal shares jumped in Hong Kong after the US said it's poised to lift sanctions on the aluminium producer as Russian billionaire Oleg Deripaska cut his stake. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. In Sweden, the krona is strengthening after the country's central bank raised rates for the first time since 2011. Economists had been split on whether policymakers would hike. Sweden's repo rate now stands at -0.25%.
And we have another central bank decision on tap for today, though it's likely to prove uneventful. Bloomberg's Lucy Meakin reports from London.
The Bank of England is set to announce its final policy decision of the year, with Brexit uncertainty remaining high, less than 100 days before the UK leaves the European Union. That's likely to keep the central bank's hands tied. All but one of 61 economists in a Bloomberg survey predict officials will keep rates unchanged at 0.75%. In London, Lucy Meakin, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Lucy, thank you. And oil is falling as the Fed stokes fears about economic growth at a time when investors face a supply glut. Checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil is down 3.7% on $1.76. It's at $46.41 a barrel. Brent is down 3.2% on $1.84 to $55.40. S&P futures down 4.5 points right now. Dow futures down 41. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It is 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to check what else is going on around the world. For that, we say good morning to Bloomberg's Pat Carroll.
Good morning, Nathan. The Senate has approved temporary funding to keep the government open through early February. Senator Jeff Flake was in the chair for last night's voice vote.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The motion is agreed to.
If the House approves it and the president signs it, the legislation will avoid a partial government shutdown Friday. But members of the conservative House Freedom Caucus say the president's political base will be angry if he signs a bill without funding for a border wall. Skeptical lawmakers say they want answers on how President Trump arrived at his decision to declare victory over Islamic State militants in Syria and order a full withdrawal. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
The first mistake, says Republican Senator John Cornyn, was surprising Congress. Now lawmakers from the president's own party are determined not to let him make that mistake worse. Senators Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio fear a vacuum.
If we do, in fact, withdraw, the biggest winners are going to be Iran, ISIS, Assad.
I don't know who advised this decision to be made, but it's a terrible mistake.
Indeed, Democrat Tim Kaine questions if it's being done on the Pentagon's advice or against it. But Republican Rand Paul says Trump's decision took courage.
We're in war in too many places. I commend the president for his decision.
Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
North Korean state media says removal of the U.S.'s nuclear weapons from the region is a condition of its own disarmament. This raises the stakes for President Trump's efforts to hold a second summit with Kim Jong-un. The commentary says the two leaders agreed in June to work toward the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, not only North Korea. Russian President Vladimir Putin is warning about the rising threat of nuclear war. He made the comment at his annual news conference. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has asked the House Intelligence Committee to turn over a transcript of its closed-door 2017 interview of longtime Trump advisor Roger Stone. This is the first time the panel's been asked to turn over testimony to Mueller from its investigation of Russian election meddling. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air, and a TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Pat Carroll. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Pat, thank you. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Nets grinded out another win on back-to-back nights.
Dinwiddie inbound. Play goes in motion. Dinwiddie out top, left side, Harris. Pump fake.
drives, a floater, and it's good, and the Nets take the lead with 43 seconds to go.
Nets Radio Network on the call. That floater turned out to be the game-winning shot as Brooklyn won in Chicago 96-93 to win their seventh straight. Three starters scored in double figures for Brooklyn, and they were all outdone, though, by Spencer Dinwiddie, who had 27 points off the bench. This is the first time the Nets have had a streak this long since 2017. Knicks weren't as fortunate in Philadelphia. Too much of former number one overall Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons driving on Bonley, knocks him away and jams him with the right hand and then stares him down.
Sixers Radio Network 131-109 as Simmons was one of four starters for Philadelphia to reach double figures. Sixers balanced offensively as they scored at least 30 points in all four quarters. Knicks were wiped out on the glass too, 51-35. Tim Hardaway Jr. led New York with 27 points in a losing cause. Baseball, the Yankees got a visit from free agent infielder Manny Machado on Wednesday. The two sides met at the stadium for an hour and a half. The four-time All-Star met with the White Sox on Monday and will wrap up his tour with the Phillies on Thursday. Frozen floor, just two games. Sidney Crosby and the Penguins doubled up the Capitals in Washington 2-1. Crosby notched his 16th goal of the year. Colorado stopped Montreal 2-1. And college football, Ohio shut out San Diego State 27-0 in the Frisco Bowl. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Rob, thank you. In other sports news, Cuba has inked an historic agreement with Major League Baseball. The Cuban Baseball Federation will become the fourth foreign professional baseball league to give players a legal path to sign with U.S. teams. It's a deal that's similar to agreements that the MLB has signed with leagues in Japan, Korea, and China. Futures on Wall Street headed lower after the Fed decision. S&P futures down 3 points. Dow futures down 41, NASDAQ futures down 3. That's pairing earlier losses. Price of the 10-year down 2/32, the yield at 2.76%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the Jewish Communal Fund. JCF's donor-advised fund is the smart choice to manage your philanthropy. Open a JCF fund now to lock in a 2018 tax deduction. Visit jcfny.org.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks are dropping in Europe and Asia as investors express concern about a lack of relief from the Federal Reserve's monetary tightening. The yen is climbing to its strongest since mid-October. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. U.S. stock index futures trimming their declines with S&P futures. Little change. Dow futures down 7. NASDAQ futures up 5. The DAX in Germany is down 1%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.76%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.65%. NYMEX crude oil down 3.2% at $1.54 to $46.63 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.25% or $3.20 to $12.59.60 an ounce. The euro, $1.14.80. The yen, 111.71. And today we're watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims at 8:30 Wall Street time. At 9:45, it's a Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index and a 10 leading economic indicators. Nike and Walgreens Boots Alliance among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Pat Carroll with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Karen. The Senate approves legislation to avoid a partial government shutdown and fund the government into February, putting off the president's border wall. President Trump is defending his decision to pull out of Syria, but doesn't say if airstrikes will continue and gives no timetable for withdrawal. North Korea says it won't disarm unless the U.S. removes nuclear weapons from the Korean Peninsula. In sports, in the NBA, the Nets beat the Bulls. Knicks lost to the Sixers. The Celtics fell to the Suns. Wizards lost to the Rockets, and Golden State fell to Utah. On the ice, the Capitals fell to the Penguins. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Pat Carroll. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Pat, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined now on this morning after Fed Decision Day by Mark Grant, Chief Global Strategist at B. Riley FBR. Nice to talk to you, Mark, and looking at the contracts this morning. Pairing earlier losses now showing little changed, but boy, what a furious reaction to Fed Chairman Powell's statement. What's your read on it?
My read is that the Fed is their policy is just
plain wrong. The Fed acknowledged that the growth forecast for next year dropped from 250 to 2.30%, and then they pared back slightly on their hikes. They hiked yesterday. They said there'll probably be two more. I think that they should have stopped. The economy is suffering to some extent at this point as we look around, and it's causing what the Fed is doing is causing major problems for both the equity and the bond markets.
So why do you think the Fed decided to go in this direction?
The Fed keeps talking. A number of the governors keep talking about a return to normalcy, and my comment would be that since the debacle with the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy 10 years ago, there's been no normalcy, so you can't return to something that wasn't. I think the Congress, our elected officials, are doing everything in their power to grow the economy, and I particularly point to the Tax Cut Act. And the economy was doing fine, equities were doing fine, and then the Fed, I think, is the major cause of the downturn in equities and debt. And when I talk about debt, yes, treasuries are up some, but the market CDX North American Investment Grade CDS index closed at a two-year high yesterday. Bloomberg's index for high yield, the all-sector OAS index, is its widest since 2016. So I think the policies of the Fed are causing major disruptions in both equities and debt, and I don't think there's any reason for it. I think the Fed should have stopped, should have said we're going to go on hold for a while to see how things play out, and they decided to take another course, which I think is causing as I said, major disruptions in the markets.
Well, when you have the kind of economic indicators we've had of late that have shown, you know, pretty strong growth over time, you know, much of it, it could have been catalyzed by the tax cuts and deregulation. I mean, why wouldn't there be a reason for the Fed to give that a little bit of support by continuing on the path that it's set out?
Well, the path that it set out, I think, was incorrect methodology. We have around the world recently, which I thought was very interesting, an increase in negative yielding bonds. They're now at $7.9 trillion in the world, and this is up from $5.7 trillion in October, which gives you a real sign of the true global economic conditions, where now, you know, it's funny in a way, the Fed and the other central banks can create money from nothing, but now we have a continuation of what I consider some kind of craziness, where the lender is paying the borrower for the privilege of lending them money. If we took Germany as an example, they have no positive yields out to 7 years. Yes, treasuries are up, but everything is widening against it. And, of course, the cost of borrowing, whether it's for a mortgage, for student loans, whether it's corporate borrowing, has now gone up and up and up as the Fed keeps hiking rates, which means that the earnings and potential profits for many corporations, many companies, are going to be less because of their increased borrowing costs. I just think it's a wrong strategy to begin with.
In our last 30 seconds, then, now that the Fed is hiking rates and signaling a couple more hikes next year, what do you see that doing to growth in 2019?
I think growth slows. I'm just hoping it doesn't grind to a halt and we don't find ourselves in some kind of recession, because the Fed is just being too aggressive in raising rates, and there are ramifications of raising rates, as I said, which means that the cost to borrow for any reason at all is much more expensive, and this could, you know, and the mortgage area could hurt the companies that build houses. It could even hurt Wall Street as issuance slows down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a decided negative for both markets.
Mark Grant, Chief Global Strategist, B. Riley FBR. Thanks for being with us here on Bloomberg Daybreak. And futures are little changed at the moment. This is Bloomberg. And for breaking news wherever you are, Bloomberg and Twitter have launched TikTok by Bloomberg, the first global news network designed for social media, offering live video coverage and hourly updated top news reports verified by Bloomberg at TICTOC.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks around the world are falling after a decision from the Federal Reserve viewed as less dovish than expected. The central bank raised rates while paring its forecast to two hikes next year.
Europe's Stoxx 600 is down 1%. U.S. stock futures are little changed after yesterday's slump. Guggenheim Chief Investment Officer Scott Minard's concerned the recent sell-off could become a systematic problem.
I think we're running the risk here that this can move towards something systemic. The fact that it's becoming harder and harder to find the marginal buyers in credit is telling us that there isn't enough liquidity in the system. If this continues long enough, we could be subject to a severe asset price break, which was by definition a systemic decline.
The S&P 500 finished the day down 1.5%, while the Nasdaq slid more than 2%.
Most emerging market currencies weakened following the Fed decision, and that has one prominent investor giving the central bank a failing grade. Bloomberg's Christine Burke reports.
Heyman founder Kyle Bass said that the Fed really was not dovish enough for emerging markets, actually said that Jerome Powell flunked the test, considering that emerging markets are flashing red. And when you look to emerging markets, they probably just needed to see a bit more softness if they're going to get any real boost from this.
Chairman Jerome Powell suggested he'll be more cautious about raising rates next year, but investors wanted more.
Oil is falling as the Fed stokes fears about economic growth at a time when investors face a supply glut. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate's down 3.3%, down $1.59 at $46.58 a barrel. Brent down 3%, $1.76 lower, trading at $55.48.
Sweden's currency is strengthening after the central bank raised rates for the first time in 7 years. The Riksbank added a quarter of a percentage point to its repo rate, a move forecast by less than half of economists surveyed.
The yen is stronger after the Bank of Japan left policy unchanged. Japanese stocks entered a bear market following the decision with a 2.5% loss for the TOPIX.
And there's another central bank decision on tap today. The Bank of England is expected to keep policy unchanged with less than 100 days before the UK leaves the European Union. Right now, futures are little changed. Dow futures down 9, Nasdaq futures up 4. The DAX in Germany is down 1%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.76%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.65%. NYMEX crude oil is down 3.33% at $46.55 a barrel. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. Let's find out what else is going on around the world. Good morning, Bloomberg's Pat Carroll.
Good morning, Nathan. The Senate has approved legislation to avoid a partial government shutdown, Bloomberg's John Tucker reports.
The temporary funding keeps the government open until February 8th. The House will now take up the measure, and leaders from both parties have signaled support. Last night's vote puts off confrontation over President Trump's proposed $5 billion border wall, and Democrats will be in control of the House when the temporary funding expires. Members of the conservative House Freedom Caucus say the president's political base will be angry if he signs a bill without funding for the wall. If the measure isn't enacted, 9 government departments will run out of funding Friday night. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Facing a bipartisan backlash, President Trump posted a Twitter video last night defending his decision to pull out of Syria.
We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. We've taken back the land, and now it's time for our troops to come back home.
The announcement, though, leaves key details unanswered, including a timetable for withdrawal, whether all troops will be pulled out, and whether airstrikes will continue. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says the decision betrays our Kurdish allies. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has asked the House Intelligence Committee for the Roger Stone transcript. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
This is the closed-door interview in 2017 with the committee. Stone is a longtime advisor to President Trump. This is the first time Mueller has asked the intelligence panel to turn over testimony from the now shuttered investigation of Russian election meddling. So the committee is scheduled to talk about this in a special meeting titled Transmission of Certain Executive Session Materials to the Executive Branch. Stone has responded, oh, they don't have them. So this has evolved into semantical word games, partisan hair splitting, and non-material perjury traps. Stone has also maintained he did not collude with the Russians. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
In his annual news conference, Russian President Vladimir Putin is warning about the rising threat of a nuclear war. He points to the U.S. intention to withdraw from the 1987 INF Treaty. A runway at London's Gatwick Airport is closed and flights are suspended after reports of drones flying over the airfield last night and this morning. The airport says it's working with airlines to get information to passengers. Global news 24 hours a day on air and a TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Pat Carroll. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Pat. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. Number seven in a row for Brooklyn as the Nets edge the Bulls in the waning moments, 96-93 in Chicago. Coach Kenny Atkinson says they grinded it out.
We were stuck in mud a little bit. Our offense was not its usual, spry and dynamic offense. Great job of grinding it out.
Spencer Dinwiddie earning that new contract extension. He scored 27 to lead Brooklyn. The Nets have their longest winning streak in over 3 years. The Knicks ran into an offensive juggernaut in Philadelphia as the upstart Sixers scored 30 or more in each quarter en route to a 131-109 win. Former number one overall pick Ben Simmons impresses in so many ways, said Knicks coach David Fizdale.
A rare player that can play point guard, but he's 6'9", and he's a power forward in his body. You know, it's very similar to LeBron that way. So, you know, Noah's our best matchup for him. You know, the same way we match Noah on Giannis. And I thought he did a solid job for a power forward trying to guard a point guard.
Tim Hardaway Jr. scored 27 in a losing effort. Another NBA note, the Houston Rockets hit an NBA record 26 three-pointers as they beat the Wizards 136-118 behind 35 from James Harden. The Bronx came alive for about 90 minutes on Wednesday in anticipation of what may become. Free agent infielder Manny Machado met with the Yankees. He's already visited the White Sox and will be in Philadelphia later today before making up his mind. The four-time All-Stars played for the Orioles and Dodgers. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Thank you, Rob. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. Bitcoin is the cover story. We also take a look at the rise of Bitcoin ATMs. Matt Robinson wrote that one for Bloomberg Businessweek.
The first one came out in 2013. Now there are about 4,000 worldwide, most of which are in the U.S. I mean, there's more than, you get about 100 in New York. What's been interesting about this industry is that although Bitcoin has been going down all this year, the number of machines going up.
Read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Businessweek. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time right here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg's Joan Doniger is here with the Tri-State Business Report. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning, Nathan. Well, it may not end up being lack of funding that could kill Amtrak. It could be climate change. By the middle of the century, parts of Amtrak's Northeast Corridor face the threat of flooding, rising seas, and storm surge, all of which could erode the track bed and knock out the signals that direct train traffic. Members of Amtrak's planning staff say should one segment of track shut down, there's no alternate route to be used as a detour. Wall Street's big banks made so much money during the first three quarters of this year that they're heading toward their first $100 billion year ever. But there isn't a lot of holiday spirit because of that. Strategists say could be worry about the possibility the economy is slowing, or it could be caution about flaunting record profits just a decade after a taxpayer bailout. EDF Renewables didn't let New Jersey's rejection of its bid to build a small pilot offshore wind farm off the Atlantic City coast stop work on a bigger project. NJ Spotlight says this one A partnership with Shell New Energies, it would be a lot bigger, about 8 miles off the Atlantic City coast. The plan to have it running by the mid-2020s. With the Tri-State Business Report, I'm Joan Doniger. Nathan?
Thank you, Joan. It is 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potosk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, I'm reporting on the latest Philly Fed Manufacturing Business Survey.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, I'm reporting that the maker of Saucony shoes is suing 3M, alleging it concealed information about health risks of chemicals in its Scotchgard stain repellent.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on an unexpected Black Friday boost as UK retail sales surged more than expected.
This is Joan Doniger telling WWJ listeners in Detroit two German car makers may join forces to make key car parts.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KRLD in Dallas. Struggling home furnishings chain Pier 1 announced the sudden departure of its CEO.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Futures contracts pointing lower this morning, but not quite as low as they had been, with S&P futures down 3 points at the moment, Dow futures down 46, NASDAQ futures down by 8 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's coming up on 5:41 on Wall Street. Coming up on Bloomberg Daybreak, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion to get insights into the Federal Reserve's interest rate decision that you will not hear anywhere else. This is Bloomberg. Good morning.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks are dropping in Europe and Asia as investors express concern about a lack of relief from the Federal Reserve's monetary tightening, the yen climbing to its strongest since mid-October. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 5 points, Dow futures down 53, NASDAQ futures down 8, the DAX in Germany is down 1.1%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 2.76%, yield on the 2-year 2.65%. NYMEX crude oil down 3.8% on $1.83 to $46.36 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.2%, down $2.40 at $12.58.80 an ounce. The euro, $1.1473, the yen 111.73. And today we are watching for the weekly report on initial jobless claims at 8:30 Wall Street time. At 9:45, it's the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index and a 10 leading economic indicators. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Pat Carroll with more on what's going on around the world. Pat.
Thanks, Karen. By a voice vote, the Senate last night approved a plan to fund the government into the new year, putting off debate over a border wall. The House will have to approve it and President Trump to sign it to avoid a Friday shutdown. President Trump is defending his claim that ISIS is defeated in the face of a bipartisan backlash. Russian President Vladimir Putin used his annual news conference to warn about the rising threat of nuclear war. Sports. In the NBA, the Nets beat the Bulls. Knicks lost to the Sixers. Celtics fell to the Suns. Wizards lost to the Rockets, and Golden State fell to Utah. On the ice, Capitals fell to the Penguins. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Pat Carroll. This is Bloomberg. Nathan?
Thank you, Pat. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where we're coming up on 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics, expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Joined live now from our London Bureau by Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan. And of course, the big global topic du jour, Jen, is the Fed decision. What does Mohamed El-Erian make of it?
Well, there's the 25 basis point rate increase, of course, but more importantly, the path for future rate hikes was slowed a lot less than markets had hoped. And so what does this do? It affirms that the Fed's focus is firmly on domestic and economic issues. But markets' reaction suggests that there's a concern there about a policy mistake rather than responsible policy making. And so what this does is highlight a phenomenon. The Fed and other central banks are really getting themselves stuck in this no-win situation due to factors that are mostly outside their control. And that's what's going to play out over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and Ellerian sees a pretty substantial split here between the markets and the economy.
Yeah, I mean, he sees an economy that it's expanding at a pretty robust pace and markets that are just exceptionally volatile. And so, you know, that does explain why the Fed meeting was preceded by such a great deal of uncertainty. But rather than this providing proof of kind of a decoupling, if you would, between the economy and markets, what it shows is that there's actually a gap that's been closing, and that gap was created by former Fed chairs. So, you know, of course, since the 2008 global financial crisis, there's been an incredible amount of exceptional easing, and some observers, including Ellerian, expressed concerns about the risks and unintended consequences here. Now, however noble you thought central banks' aims are, what the situation they're in now is the reverse of what they were intending previously. So you've got a still solid U.S. economy, which isn't sufficient to dampen financial volatility.
Still, you mentioned Ellerian's concern. How does he see this playing out?
Well, you've got this tug of war with central banks, markets, and domestic economic conditions, and he sees that as being unlikely to end anytime soon. What does this mean more broadly? Well, central banks were celebrated for their whatever-it-takes policy mindset, and that reduced the risk of a multi-year depression. But now the environment they're operating in is much more sort of lose-lose, and it's for reasons that they really can't control.
And John Authors seems to think that the markets, in their reaction, are grasping what the Fed means by quantitative tightening. He sees a statement that Chairman Powell made yesterday that captures what markets have been missing up to now.
Yeah, he's focused on this interesting quote. So Powell was asked about the Fed's balance sheet and the policy of quantitative tightening. So the policy of reversing years of quantitative easing to buy bonds. And here's what Powell said. We came to the decision that we would have the balance sheet runoff on automatic pilot and use rate policy as the active tool of monetary policy, and I don't see us changing that. So what Arthur says is that implicit here is a belief that the steady move to reduce the Fed's balance sheet and mop up liquidity was not going to roil the markets.
Why is that surprising?
Well, for some reason, he hadn't really said this quite so bluntly before, and by judging by the market's reactions, investors kind of didn't think that this was the plan. I mean, we've known for years that QE had helped keep the stock market afloat, and it was logical to believe that tightening that would inevitably follow QE would have the effect of reversing this impact. And so what Arthur says is that Wednesday may go down in history as the day when the markets finally grasp this.
So where does this leave markets and the Fed?
Well, they're really at odds, and it's not clear who deserves to win, because Powell seems to have badly misjudged the leveling of anxiety in markets about quantitative tightening and the effect that it's having on liquidity. And by the same token, the markets seem to be moving to discount an imminent recession in a far more extreme way than anything in the data currently supports.
Also, Jen, there's a retail sales report just out of the UK this morning, moving the pound. What does Bloomberg Opinion make of that?
So the Office for National Statistics has taken the data from Black Friday that really gave a lift to a lot of sales through the discounting there. And so it makes it look like everything is fine and dandy for UK retailers. And it's been, if you recall, a really torrid week because we've had warnings and concern from the likes of ASOS that consumers are really pulling in spending. Bloomberg Opinion has a piece out this morning from Andrea Felstead that says don't get too distracted by this retail sales report and this enthusiasm that the pound has shown for it, because with Brexit and some warm weather and consumers really being skittish, these sales could just be money that's been spent, pulled forward from December. And so it could wind up that British retail really is still in kind of a retail nightmare.
Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan joining us from London. Jen, thanks as always. You can read more about these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion. On the Bloomberg Terminal, customers type in OPIN. Go. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It's 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Seven former NFL players received a skeptical reception from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals on their claims that several teams gave players pain medications at the expense of their long-term health and then concealed the scheme. A bill to create a federal program for promoting quantum technology has cleared the House. The measure calls for an office to oversee interagency planning of research, development, and other program activities. And New York Democratic Senator Charles Schumer and Utah Republican Orrin Hatch plan to introduce a federal bill seeking to regulate state-run sports betting.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
In another legal news, President Trump agreed to close his embattled personal charity under an agreement with the New York Attorney General, though the dissolution doesn't end the pending lawsuit against the president, Ivanka, Eric, and Donald Trump Jr. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with Eric Larson, a legal reporter for Bloomberg News.
Let's start with the basics of the lawsuit and the AG's claims that donated money was used for Trump's own interests, including $10,000 the charity spent to buy a 6-foot oil portrait of Trump, to $7 to the Boy Scouts, which matches the amount required for Donald J. Trump Jr.'s Scout membership that year.
The Boy Scout payment is not actually part of the lawsuit, but the complaint that was filed in June does have outlined about a half dozen payments that the charity made that they say violated state charity law, including a $10,000 spending on that oil portrait that you mentioned. That was at a charity auction that Trump bought that.
They also said that he used some of this to settle legal disputes.
Yes, a few of the transactions relate to legal disputes. The charity spent $100,000 back in 2007 to pay a Mar-a-Lago legal settlement, and also over $100,000 in 2012 to help pay a hole-in-one $1 million golf award, things like that. So the AG says that these violated state law because they had nothing to do with the charity and that they weren't for charitable purposes.
So what does the Trump Organization say in response? What's their defense?
Their defense is that even though some of the money may not have seemed to have gone straight to charity, it eventually made its way to charity. For example, that portrait that was purchased that was for a charity auction, and the hole-in-one payment also related to a charity tournament. So things like that. The state says that that's neither here nor there, that that doesn't make the payments proper. And in some cases, the foundation did pay itself back the money to try to resolve that situation out of an abundance of caution, they said.
And that's Eric Larson, Bloomberg News legal reporter, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And futures are lower this morning. S&P futures down 4 points. Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ futures down 6. The DAX in Germany down 1%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.76%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.65%. And the 30-year yield is at 2.97%. NYMEX crude oil continues to fall, down 3.7% on $1.78 to $46.39 a barrel. Brent dropping as well, down 3.7% at $55.10 a barrel. And the yen is at 111.72. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.